and welcome back to French Reno Diaries Uncensored, the podcast that spills the beans on renovating in France. I'm Rosie, and along with Michaela and Sue, we're here to give you the real talk, no filters, on what it's really like to transform properties over here. In our very first episode, we shared our own renovation stories and professional insights. So today we thought we'd take a close look at the entertaining, yet often misleading, world of TV DIYers versus the nitty-gritty reality of renovating a property in France.
They need to do a Chateau DIY Nightmares. They need to do one specifically to show everybody's mistakes, mishaps, what they should have done, what they, you know, that's what I'd want to see.
We watch it like Gogglebox because some of the things he does, we're like shouting at the TV screen like, oh my God, why don't you fix your roof before you put the tiles on the floor in the kitchen?
These kind of shows rely on a certain kind of person, somebody that might be perhaps not as clued up about things as we sit as Goggleboxes, to be able to deliver what they want for us to see.
So, if you've ever watched a TV renovation show and thought, I can do that, or wondered if going DIY is truly the best way to save money, then this is certainly the episode for you. We'll be busting myths, sharing some brutal truths, and helping you decide when it's okay to DIY and when it's really time to call in the professionals. So, let's get into it. Hello, ladies. How are you today? Good to see you.
Thank you. How are you? Hope you've had a good week.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yeah, I think this is one we've all been looking forward to, this episode. I think the main crux of the show is about the DIY shows we all see on TV and YouTube nowadays, because people are doing their own YouTube like reality shows, aren't they? A lot of chateau programs out there. And they often concentrate more on the pleasurable aspects, with little snippets maybe of problems in between that are quickly kind of solved when people are renovating specifically in France. But also, we do think they gloss over things like the more painful and frustrating elements of what we know is the real kind of nitty-gritty in France when you're renovating. So maybe, Sue, you can start us off on what you like to watch, and if you, you know, like it, love it, hate it, what you think about it.
Well, for me, I started watching these kind of programs. I think it was either A New Place in the Sun at Home or Abroad, and then they started bringing in France, Spain, etc. back in the early 2000s. And I've always been interested in property shows. So I was a religious watcher, especially the ones in France, because obviously we had a dream to live in France, so we were really interested. And then it went on to New Place in the Sun, then it went on to New Life in the Sun, which then kind of wasn't just about properties, it was about people setting up businesses, moving abroad, renovating as well, etc. And then obviously the ultimate one came in, it's got to be 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
An angel. Escape to the Chateau. I have to say, I loved watching that from the beginning. Absolutely loved it. Again, because I was fascinated in French properties. We were just on the cusp of our dream becoming a reality. So we were kind of looking at it. Yes, people will say certain things about it, that obviously they bought a cheaper property and they've done some elaborate renovations in it and things like that. But I liked it purely for the entertainment value and to see what they were going to do next. That was it. And then Chateau DIY came out and I watched we both watched the first series of that. So it was different people buying chateaus in France. After that first series, we stopped watching it.
Oh, did you? Why?
It was just painful.
Painful because you didn't think it reflected what it was like, really?
Yeah, I mean, for us, obviously, Scott's been in the building industry for over 30 years, so it was just like they were trying to fill the content. They'd run out of content and were trying to fill it. And the more series that go on, it's all about somebody painting a dresser rather than actually renovating. And It was just like, oh, let's what can we do now? Let's fill it in. So we just got a bit fed up with it. And I have to say, I still watch A Place in the Sun because I like to see what kind of properties people are buying. Now, we still watch them for entertainment value. And when the Brexit word hit, they didn't really touch on it. They're starting to now on visas and things like that, because I think that's really important for people that want to move, because there's still a lot of people out there that 5 years later really don't understand. But yeah, it's in terms of the renovating,
it's become a bit more and more aspirational rather than realistic, I find, because a lot of them are chateau buyers and we can't all buy a chateau, can we, in France and show our wonderful lives renovating day to day. So
but with chateaus come deep pockets and, you know, plenty of money to make sure that you can upkeep them and keep them going. So,
Yeah. So on that note, Michaela, what are the shows that you've watched over the years and
pretty
what are your faves?
Always liked A Place in the Sun because I loved Yasmin. And then when Escape to the Chateau came out with Dick and Angel, I liked it from the perspective that they knew how to PR the hell out of what they were doing, you know, just kind of zone in on making cushions that you could then buy in Sainsbury's. And, you know, Dick's kind of thought process in terms of, you know, creating a lift and fixing a roof. So from that perspective, but
they were really good business people.
Exactly. Mm. And do you know what? That's exactly what reality TV is. When we started to talk about this particular topic, I just took myself off and thought, what's behind reality TV? And it's, you know, there's a format. TV's a business. They're out to make money. You know, we see these shows being replicated and franchised around the world and they make great TV.
Yeah.
But the shows are there to tap into the fundamental human desire of transformation and self-improvement. And they represent a simplified, achievable vision of what's possible, fueling dreams and aspirations, which is what you alluded to, Rosie. And viewers are drawn in by the before and after narrative and the rapid progress and the seemingly effortless success of the hosts. It's a form of escapism for us viewers, where complex, messy and expensive realities are compressed into digestible, entertaining format. So when I kind of revisited this question about whether I liked and whether I hated it, I just thought, I don't love it, I don't hate it, but I respect the fact and appreciate that TV is a business and they're out to make money and they rely on the human psyche to make them a huge success.
You have definitely thought more into it and profoundly than I have a little bit of a different take than you, Michaela, in some respects, because they drive me insane, most of them. I mean, I do have my favourites, but there are certain ones, and I won't mention names of the ones that I'm not so fond of, but there is one that springs to mind that John and I watch on a regular basis, which is, well, I will say it's about a guy who's got his own little kind of domain, farmhouse property in Normandy. And he is doing, you know, his little property up bit by bit, and good on him. I mean, we do find it entertaining to watch, but we watch it like Gogglebox, because some of the things he does are like shouting at the TV screen, like, oh my God, why don't you fix your roof before you put the tiles on the floor in the kitchen? Because all the water's coming, you know, through the roof. And he's like constantly going in there saying, oh yeah, I've had a leak today. Like, I put insulation in the roof and now it's soaking wet. And it's kind of like, you know, I find those elements of these reality TV shows quite frustrating.
Going back to what Sue said earlier about A Place in the Sun, we don't generally tend to sit and watch them avidly, but if we have time to have dinner in the evening and we watch A Place in the Sun, we find that, I guess, for some of those properties that are on the market, it's an end result of a failed dream or a desire to go back to the UK because it's gone wrong. And then you see properties that are being sold as renovations, and we sit there and we point the fork at the TV and go, that's not finished, or look at the state of the electrics on that. So, you know, some of these reality TV shows sell the dream, and then A Place in the Sun a few months later or a few years later, you see those properties on the market trying to be sold on. So
do you know what I wish they'd do? And this is to all you TV production people, They need to do a Chateau DIY Nightmares. They need to do one specifically.
Oh, yes.
To show everybody's mistakes, mishaps, what they should have done, what they... You know, that's what I'd want to see. I want to know why these people have thought, oh, let's abandon it and sell it.
Give
it
to somebody else. Like behind the scenes bloopers that have really set them off track and being really like open and frank about it.
Not scripted renovation, which these programs are.
I want
to see it. And I know YouTube is supposed to be a bit like that, but it's the same thing. They can edit it. They can edit it in a way that makes them look better.
Oh, and they do, definitely.
And they do. And they'll if they've made a massive boo-boo, then a lot of the times they're not going to want to share that publicly. If it's huge and it's cost them thousands and thousands of euros, or I want to see that. That's what I want.
Definitely. Yeah. Like the non-glossy version, like we started off saying. Maybe people listening to this podcast can like leave some comments below and let us know if they would really like to see that and if it would be popular or not. But I agree with you. I would love to see that side of things too.
We kind of have that devil in us, don't we? That sadistic kind of, we want to see people fall flat on their face.
Yeah.
In a nice, entertaining way. You know what I mean?
No, we don't want to see them hurt or
anything like that.
Like an ambulance taking them off to hospital because they've fallen off the roof. We don't want to see that.
Yeah, that doesn't make for great TV. Going back to the words you used earlier, we're goggle boxes. And these kind of shows are shown and recorded and delivered in a way that we sit comfortably from the comfort of our own homes and our sofas to see those little mad moments that homeowners have or the hosts have on these shows. But then equally, we invest in time and energy in them becoming the hero of the story. So when they see that, you know, the roof needs to be redone and it's done in 30 seconds and we're like, yay, while we're eating our popcorn and our crisps, you know, yes, the roof's done.
We are all eager to see that moment, aren't we? It's true.
Yeah, it's the positive side of a TV show, kind of getting people to stay tuned in and connected. You know, you've said yourself, Rosie, that, you know, you and John regularly watch a particular YouTube channel. It's not to learn how to do things, but obviously to have a little Gogglebox moment yourself and thinking,
You know what's the weird thing about it is he's like a friend. He's like a friend that you want to like help and reach out to and say, no, don't do that. Like, think about it a little bit. I just want to add a few that I like. Like, I'm going to name drop a little bit because I do like some of them, and I'll tell you the reasons why. But I mean, one that I do watch sometimes, not really regularly, and it is one that's a little bit like they've got so much money that obviously things are just going to be so splendid and amazing. But it's Chateau de Pernon. I don't know if you've seen it. They've bought like a really, really grandiose chateau in, I think, the south of France or mid-France somewhere. Don't know exactly where. And they've got loads of grants and they've had photos shaking hands with Macron, and because I think he was an Australian MP and they moved to France together. And they spend their days renovating this immense chateau. But I really like it because they've had to, because of the grants that they have from the government, they've had to do everything by the book. So they bring in like, you know, the top artisans of France, and they show like how they're creating this amazing stone masonry, and you know, they find things in the chateau because it's so steeped in history, this one in particular. The other day I saw like he found this thing on the wall where it told like when the summer solstice hit a hole in a piece of metal that was on the wall of the chateau, it told you when the summer solstice was, and it is quite interesting. So that's one that I do really like, but I do also understand that if you've got a lot of money, then it's maybe
easy.
And then another one is how to renovate your chateau, because it's a young couple who've got some kids, and I think they met in Paris. He's French and she's British, but the creativity value to it is a little bit like Escape to the Chateau. So how Dick and Angel did a lot of DIY and she did her wallpapers and stuff. So I can't remember the lady's name on it, but she does her own kind of like screen printing wallpapers, and she's not just getting I think, you know, a few of them are getting companies to make wallpapers out of the chateaus that they own, sending it off to. wallpaper companies and getting, you know, them to make it like Angel did, I think. But this lady's kind of making it herself, you know. She's getting like lino prints, getting down on her knees, and like, you know, it's very, very interesting. It appeals to my design aesthetic, so I'm like all for that. I gobble that up. And then one more that I really like, and because I know them a little bit, is Oh No, Another Chateau. And it's a young couple. He's Brazilian French and she's American, and they've bought a small chateau in Normandy and they're doing it up. But he's an architect, and they're really trying to make content which is like telling you about the history, but also about things that have gone wrong and how you can tackle them practically. And Gustavo is really into like giving the correct information, and I think it's really kind of useful the way that he does it. It's entertaining too, because Rennie's kind of, she's a musician and she does their own music for it, for the show. And they're also using real artisans and showing that if it's something you can't tackle yourself, then you should get in the big guns. And then they film their kind of partnerships with the artisans that come along. So they're the real ones for me. They're the ones that
have meaningful. They're YouTube, aren't they?
They are, yeah, they are YouTube.
That brings us nicely on to what we think we DIY-wise people should tackle and when they should bring
in. What do we think of the DIY jobs that anyone can do?
For me, I think it really does depend on the personal ability of the people that have bought the house, because you'll get somebody that probably isn't in the trade, but they're a very competent DIYer, and then you can get somebody on the other hand that isn't in the trade again, that literally can't even pick up a paintbrush. You know what I mean? Some people just aren't that capable.
Yeah, aren't that skilled. So they're skilled in other ways. Yeah.
So I think it depends on their confidence and what they think that they can tackle themselves. And I do think that, I don't know, this is a really difficult one, because there'll be a lot of people out there that have said that they've done the whole lot all themselves and they can go off and build somebody else's house and blah, blah, blah. Which, fair enough, it may be a property that is fine, but it may not last as long, or... it's difficult, and I think it's down to personal confidence. I don't think anybody should be going on a roof, but that's just my personal opinion. If you don't know what you're doing, don't go up there. It's too dangerous. There's been too many cases of people falling off, even trained artisans. It can happen. It's rare, but it can happen. Electrics, but Michaela can go on to that, because that's kind of her domain. I'm not saying changing a plug socket or something like that. I'm talking about rewiring a house. If you're going on Facebook saying, can anybody give me a book so that I can rewire my house in France, don't touch it.
No, I agree.
just don't go down it. I think so, plumbing as well, although plumbing isn't particularly you kind of... basic plumbing isn't particularly, but it can cause a lot of damage if you do it wrong.
Water absolutely
causes a huge amount of damage.
Absolutely.
If you're not confident, get a plumber in. Just because the cost of having to put right something that the water damage is going to be possibly 10 times more than it costs to get the plumber in to do it in the first place.
I agree. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Like, you can lose a lot of money DIYing those kind of things.
I mean, the finishings, fair enough. If you're happy to do your tiling, you're happy to put your floor in, you're happy to do your painting, you're happy to do a little bit of pointing, as long as it's not the whole house, which makes it weatherproof. Because if you don't know what you're doing and you don't do it properly, your house is not going to be weatherproofed. But yeah, I mean, if you want to have a go, have a go. But if you factor in the time it takes you, the hours it takes you, and all those kind of things, if you've got all that time in the world, then fair enough, it might work out a little bit cheaper. But
I do think that harks back to maybe what we touched upon earlier, in the fact that some people who've got enough money to spend their days renovating their own properties, it's not really what we can all do. It's very aspirational, and you know, there's something in that we all get hooked onto and want to. We want a life like that, you know. If
we're not all retired and have got 24/7
So what about you, Michaela? What do you, I mean, you're the expert on electrics, really, aren't you? And I think that is definitely one that you shouldn't DIY, that we've said.
Yeah, I would advocate that, you know, electrics is one of those professional jobs that need a professional to do. But, you know, like you ladies, when we see across Facebook groups, you know, can you share a book where I can, you know, or a YouTube channel where you can just do this, that and the other. It makes me wince because I just think, what did my husband spend 3 years doing his City and Guilds training for?
Yeah, but it also makes you worry. It makes you worry about those people. I mean, it's like,
mantra,
you know,
the mantra of our business.
Are they okay?
the mantra of our business is to be electrically safe in your home. And we've been to properties, or he's been to properties where, I was an electrical engineer in the Navy. So, yeah, I've done a lot of my own wiring. And you kind of think, well done. And we've seen a property that was done by an electrical engineer in the Navy. I'll tell you a short story. It was a property close to us. It had the diagnostics. The purchaser came to us and said, I've got the diagnostics. Can you check it through? And the pool went, it needs a rewire. First and foremost, that wasn't part of my purchasing plan. So he made it safe where it was needed to be safe. But, you know, problems then ensued that they tried to pin back on Paul, but it wasn't successful. But it's to take a 6 week scenario in the form of TV reality in a podcast and condense it down into 60 seconds that, you know, when you're purchasing a property, whether it's an old system, and invariably a lot of these older properties, the installation is over 15 years old, so it's not compliant. And then a lot of people come in and go, I need a new fridge. I want my cooker. I want an induction hob. I want heating. And then realise that.
Yeah, so they're adding on more onto the board. Yeah.
Fragile system that needs massively to be upgraded. And going back to the point of, you know, speed, I've made a note earlier on that a rewire might take Paul 3 weeks for a standard 3 or 4 bedroom rewire, but it might take a renovator, a DIYer, 3 months.
Yeah.
Because, as you've said, they've got the time.
It's a luxury of time, isn't it? Definitely.
So if they make an error, you know, because they've had a chat with a Facebook group in France, or they've looked at YouTube or Reddit or Quora, to get some results that way, then they've got an opportunity to kind of redo and rework what they've done. Whereas a professional tradesman, it's get the job done correctly first time, all the time.
So I think, you know, to make a summary of all that, I think we could really all agree that the DIY jobs that people can do are kind of more kind of aesthetic in your home. Like, you know, have a go at tiling, have a go at putting down some parquet, possibly have a go at painting. These are all things that you as a homeowner are going to be looking at, and they're not dangerous. They can't like affect, you know, your well-being to a major extent, or, you know, put anyone else's life at risk. So they're maybe the kind of things, and maintenance of your own home, stuff like that, non-structural stuff, non-electrical, a bit of plumbing, like you say, Sue. Yeah, we can have a go. You can have a go at that. But I mean, the things come into play, like regulations and norms and stuff like that over here, that you could get the plumbing fittings the wrong size and like things could happen. But I suppose that's all trial and error. It's not going to severely hurt somebody. It'd just be like, if you have a flood, then you'll have to deal with it, kind of thing. But yeah, certainly electrics. I think that is definitely one of the major ones. And structural, I would say. Yeah. I mean, don't try and revamp your own like roof carpentry if you don't understand, like, you know, weights and all the technical aspects of it. And how,
if you're not a carpenter.
If you're not a carpenter, yeah. Yeah, maybe doing a bit of tiling on your roof. But yeah, that leads into health and safety. Should you be getting on a roof if you're not comfortable with it? Anyway. Okay.
I just wanted to add in there, Rosie, Sue, is that I also did a bit of research on the question around DIY versus what is professional. And interestingly, Le Figaro had a report out. And the flip side is French people don't do the kind of level of DIY that, you know, our formidable Brits that come across the channel and think, yeah, it's a can-do attitude. they're more inclined to beautify their homes and make them look pretty with the aesthetics. But I guess it's a nation that also respects and values their professional artisans. So we've never seen a French person do their own electrics. And I don't think we
have. Yeah, but I will jump in here and say, if you watch more of the YouTube channels, there are more and more French younger couples doing it.
Yeah.
So it's like something that's caught on here. It's slowly catching up here. Right. As we know, like living in France, some things that we knew happened in the UK kind of filter down into France a few years later, and I do find like that is something
20 years later.
In some places, certainly in rural France it could be 50 years later, but anyway.
But interestingly, the same report said it was the 18 to 29 year olds that are more in tune with the whole energy efficiency and that homes and making of homes to be energy efficient. And I guess because they've grown up with that climatic change, whereas the older generation, and I include myself in that, might think, well, oh, it'll do, you know, it will see out until we even need to pass it on a part of inheritance or whatever. But interesting comment that you made there about the younger generation.
Yeah, so that does lead on to maybe the next segment in this, where we should talk about really why watching YouTube and TV reality shows, although we all like them, we've talked about them and we have our affinities with certain ones, why maybe they're not always the best place to go for the right information, particularly people who don't speak French fluently and they're coming to France to live and renovate and they're looking for different avenues of where they can get the right advice about renovating and how they should do things and maybe some advice about regulations and the correct, you know, path to follow. So I suppose one of those that you've mentioned, Michaela, is the DPE that you get when you buy a property over here and the consequences of maybe not following some of the rules as to how that would affect the property, passing it on down, you know, the line to your inheritors if you're going to pass property on or if you're going to sell your home. I mean, that's something definitely in the public sphere at the moment, isn't it, with some of the changes that are coming through.
Yeah, the topic of DPE and energy efficiency is something that is not going to go away. I mean, we've all entered France at a time where DPE was in existence. And it's changed a lot over the last couple of years to include the energy efficiency. Although,
just to butt in before, what does DPE stand for? Maybe we should
diagnostic
performance
energy
energetic. Energy, so it's like a report of the energy efficiency of your property. That you get when you buy a house, isn't it? And it really is something at the moment that I would say people should be looking at before they even try doing any DIY themselves. What do you think? It's got some consequences, hasn't it?
Yeah, the DPE has certainly come on leaps and bounds over recent years. But in the last 18 months or so, there's been a real knock-on effect in terms of the energy efficiency that tags onto the end of the DPE, which means that, let's say, for instance, if you see a property that's rated G by a certain time point, there should be no properties out there, whether rented or purchased, that should be valued at a G. So the next phase is getting properties, you know, into or out of F and into E, and a good rate, which is deemed good, is a value of D.
D and above.
So when you compare that with somebody that's renovating, when they think about how that house is going to be sold on, it's all you have to have your DPE as part of your sale or part of renting. Mm. So it's a legal part of the selling process. So if you've got somebody that's put in pretty windows, they're not double glazed, they might not be energy efficient, or the roof, or this, that, and the other, then it may well affect the overall rating of when they want to sell that on.
I've got a feeling like we're going to get a lot of comments here from people who are like, oh, preserve the old windows, reuse them. We love to see that. We love to, like, stop putting people off doing that. And there is something in that. There is something in, like, you know, we want to restore things. We want to, like, preserve things. I understand that. And I don't know about you, Sue. Like, when we first came to France, we were really in the same vein as that. We really felt like we wanted to, like, conserve the features and stuff. But over the years of being here, you, and also with this DPE thing that's coming in, it seems like there are restrictions coming in that where we have to follow some of the rules and regulations. Otherwise, we're just going to be like, you know, chipping ice off the top of the toilet just to go to the toilet in the winter, because we've only got single glazing in our houses in northern France, and it gets really, really cold at certain points of the year. Or, you know, I see a lot of people on reality shows, and we have clients who love the stone wall effect, and I completely get it. It's so beautiful, and they just want to repoint it, but they're repointing all the exterior walls of their houses inside, and it's so cold in winter, and they're losing all this heat, and then wondering why they've got to wear 5 jumpers. And they're the sort of things we don't see on these reality TV shows.
Ideally, if people are doing DIY, the things that they don't see, like the insulation in the wall, it's not pretty, you don't see it, but it's really, really important. You need to spend your money and get the best that you can afford and the best that you can fit in your property to make it more efficient.
Yeah, agreed.
And people skip that.
I think that's where it's lacking, reality TV, because it's the nice elements that we all like to watch for that entertainment value, isn't it? I mean, the other stuff's maybe a little bit boring, I don't know, but it's really kind of like important at the same time. So, yeah. Just touching on a few other things, like getting into the nitty gritty. It's like speed and budget. I don't think that's realistic on these shows. I think we've already talked about this a little bit, really. But I think, like, you know, showing that you need your roof done and then it's done 3 days later is really not...
Builder mate Steve.
Builder mate Steve. Send him up on the roof. Yeah, those things are a little bit dodge on reality TV shows. And then unexpected problems... This is one that we don't see a lot of, isn't it? And again, I suppose it goes back to that comment that you made, Sue, about let them do a show that's like Chateau
Nightmare.
Behind the scenes. Yeah. Can we like pitch that? Maybe we should try.
Chateau Nightmares. Or DIY in renovating nightmares.
Yeah. Maybe if someone's listening, it's a producer.
Daily. I mean, I don't know about you, Rosie, and Michaela, but... Scott comes across things that even he can't predict sometimes when they're taking on renovation projects as a professional. So how somebody else deals with it. We had an artisan get in touch with us, actually, and it's a classic case of there's no project manager, and because they've never done it before, they don't know which order things go in. So they're kind of getting floors put in before the plastering's been done, and then that artisan has to wait because that one's not been done, because they don't know which order to put things in. And then time costs money. Then you upset your artisan because you're having to keep reschedule. There's only so many rescheduling you can do.
I agree. We have that problem massively. People tend to have bought a kitchen sometimes and they've not even got the kitchen like to put it in. It's not been built. And it's just like, yeah, but we went back to the UK and we really liked this kitchen. And I'm like thinking, how have you actually done it? Because you've not got a plan. you don't know. How does it fit? Like, where's the electrical plan? Where's it? Yeah. So I agree with you. People tend to, what is it, like hanging the curtains before building the wall kind of scenario is...
I get it. I'm a little bit like that. I visualise the finished room before it's even built. I can do that. And that's
I think that's good.
That's the nice bits, and I think that's what a lot of people tend to do. Right? And I'm not interested in the wall being built. That's Scott's domain. Yeah. I don't care how you're going to build it. I just want it to look like this at the end of it. You make sure you can build it. Whereas obviously he can do that. I can say, right, I want it to look like this. He can go, right, okay, we've got to do this. But if you're a DIYer, you can probably see the finished, but not necessarily know how to get to that finish from the beginning.
Yeah,
and maybe missteps or. So it's important, you know, you kind of know what you're doing. I really think it is.
But these kind of shows rely on a certain kind of person to fall into a kind of format that they're wanting to share online in the form of TV. They want somebody that might be perhaps not as clued up about things as we sit as goggle boxes from the sidelines going, oh, God, you know, should be doing that, you should be doing that. So the reality TV relies on a certain kind of participant to be able to deliver what they want for us to see.
Yeah, I think there's an awful lot of manipulation going on behind the scenes. And if we all kind of know that, like, there's a massive production team, there's people sourcing stuff, there's people, like, you know, getting contacts of, like, let's get, you know, the slates on site by next Tuesday, and there's like three production people like phoning every single like Pwampi or wherever in the, so it makes things go faster. It's not like sometimes the people who actually own the properties, maybe YouTube's a bit different, but the TV, like, you know, Escape to the Chateau DIY, a lot of it, I think realistically has a big helping hand behind the scenes.
Well, they have a deadline, don't they, for filming, and they have to meet that deadline, don't they? So, it's very scripted and not, take it on face value of what it is.
Okay, well, you know, I think we've kind of set the world to rights on that one, and I think
I'll still continue to watch them.
Yeah, me too. I find them entertaining. I definitely will still be putting my feet up on a Sunday morning with a coffee, watching the chap in Normandy trying to battle his roof, and doing his own DIY jobs.
I was chatting with the lady that we both know yesterday, and she's had been a real estate, and she's been involved in renovation herself, but she made a really interesting point. And we've alluded to it throughout this episode, that some people come over here and think, right, I want to dedicate 5 to 10 years to renovating. Certainly not something for me, and certainly not for a lot of people that I know. But she said, interestingly enough, that when they spend 5 or 10 years renovating, that after it's all finished, what's next? Because she said, a lot of us have come over here to do a bit of a doer-upper, but we also want to live a life in France. But for a lot of DIYers and renovators, the life is the DIY renovating. And then when they've got something beautiful that, you know, they can live in or whatever for the rest of their lives, she said she'd known some people that when it's done, you know, him and her haven't liked the sight of each other. There's been no life created in France.
Or they've set up a handyman or a property management company, perhaps.
But that's another topic, maybe.
That's another topic.
we each come to France with our own aspirations and dreams. You know, with a lot of people making a lot of mistakes on the road throughout that journey. And you kind of think, oh, you know, we try to help where we can. And then there are others that sail through the whole process, you know, having done their research, bit of due diligence, have got the right people in at the right time. They've got a plan. They want it done in a certain time span instead of never land and never achieving the goal.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, ladies, did watching any TV reality shows inspire you to move to France?
Well, I asked one of my clients last night. I've been working with them for 5 or 6 years. I love them to death. And I just thought, I've never asked the question, why you moved to France? And so I did. I said, why did you move to France? He said, well, I was sitting there watching A Place in the Sun one year and thinking, we can do that. I just rolled up laughing. I just thought, answer that I wouldn't expect him to say. But each to their own. We all have our own journey and route to getting across the channel.
I suppose it's a bit like influencers on Instagram nowadays. They were kind of the influencers of those shows, were the influencers of before the TikToks and the Instagrams. And we only had TV to see these things, or magazines. I mean, I used to buy Property News and all of those French property magazines when I was back in the UK, looking through them and actually getting inspiration for interiors. But maybe we're all a little bit guilty of it. I don't know.
Well, it's escapism at the end of the day, isn't it? We're all watching these shows to
Just in a different format. Like you say, Sue, I avidly had a subscription before moving to France and flicked through. And now, you know, as you say, it was the TV, reality TV. Now we've got YouTube, Instagram, TikTok influencers. So it's the same message. It's all draining into our human psyche, but it's just a different platform and a different format to hook you in from.
I think we're coming to the end of things now. But I wondered if any of you had any kind of tangible advice for listeners out there who maybe they're looking for somewhere to go to find some, you know, valuable resources. They watch the TV shows, and we've kind of said maybe it's not always the best place. I mean, entertaining, but not always the best place to get the best information. So have either of you got any kind of recommendations for people, perhaps?
I mean, for me, first thing I'd say, if anybody's looking to be renovating in France, is keep that dream going, because there'll be points of it when you think, oh God, this is all too much. Because, I mean, even for us, we kind of learned a few things when we got on the ground. So just expect the unexpected and don't think it's going to be like your home country. You know what I mean? Just yeah, kind of be a bit more kind of open-minded about it. But there's lots of great platforms out there, I think, information. There's lots of Facebook groups. Just be slightly wary of, if you've asked for advice on them, there'll be some that are factual and there'll be some that are just downright wrong. they are. Somebody will just say, it's just unbelievable, actually, some of the things that people say. Mm. But so it's about trying to pick through that advice and then obviously do your own research as well. French Entree, I think, are a pretty good site. Mm-hmm. Okay. For factual information. Again, whatever they've said, just double check it with other resources. Maybe Service Public, which is the government French website. That's great for planning and things like that. So that's a brilliant source. And you can translate it into English as well. So that's not a problem there.
Okay. Any you can think of, Michaela, do you think?
What Sue said.
But
also, you know, kind of talk to people locally, you know, build your own networks and talk to people, not necessarily other DIYs, renovators, but, you know, the Marie, you know, we all go to Brico's, we all go to Leroy Merlin's, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's always people that you can kind of tap into and ask questions of. So there's more information that you can glean whilst you've got your feet on the ground, as you alluded to earlier. But and always, I just think from our own perspective, I mean, we had a good network of people around us, but kind of follow your gut. Don't put yourself in the firing line of something that you can't get yourself out of.
Yeah.
Know your limits.
Yeah.
You know, if it's beyond your capability, then find someone that is able to do it.
Yeah, totally agree. I think for me, like, planning is key. Like, just take your time with planning it. Don't rush into it. Don't buy the kitchen before you've built the actual kitchen. You know, try and tame yourself a little bit. We all get tempted. But these things are all important. The steps, as we said before. I think if your French is okay, there are some great French resources that you can tap into. I think going back to what you said, Michaela, that places like Leroy Merlin and Point Pay, I know, have like people in there who will advise you on what to buy, how much to buy, and even like give you kind of specifications of how to fit something. So you could buy something like do your own underfloor waterproofing, and they'll give you like all the right products and then give you the specification sheets to follow. So there are resources out there, but you do need to have a bit of French to be able to follow them, I think. So it's quite integral to follow that first major step of trying to get a grasp of the language. But yeah, I think what we're going to do is we'll add all these the links to these places in the bump below, so people can look at these and find some good information in complement to the shows that they watch, and hopefully that will help people along on their DIY journeys.
It's exciting. Yeah. DIY, it is exciting for anyone doing it. I can remember, if we all think back to when we first started, you've got that naivety, that naive excitement, and I think it's nice. I think it's nice, but I think it's also nice to be able to kind of take a step back from that and find out the information before you go.
So I know you ladies have put some questions out there on social media, and this is the time in the show where we like to kind of go back to our listeners and people who are doing their own DIYs, renovations, And you asked a few questions that are relevant to this particular podcast about, yeah, those people who are actually doing that in France and what they thought about TV reality shows and what advice and do's and don'ts that they could give us. So go ahead, ladies, tell us what you've discovered.
One of the questions that we shared across Facebook groups was, if you were the producer of a new reality TV show about moving to France, what's the one real struggle you would be sure to include? And a number of people said French admin, the administrative side of France. Another one put Sarah being real about the fact that living here is not the same as being on holiday.
I like that one. That's really important. Mm. Living here is not like being on holiday.
Yeah. There was another time taken to do anything, to get the materials ordered in, to get paperwork, get quotes, get artisans to turn up. But the slow pace of life is also why we love it, despite the bureaucratic nature of French admin. So you can see why reality TV leaves all of that out, because we, you know, once you've got your foot on French soil, the rest of your days is spent dealing with French bureaucracy in one shape, form or another. Another lady, don't be tempted to buy a house with a lot of land because you've only had a 50-foot garden before, unless you're you own horses or you're a farmer.
I think that's a mistake that every single expat makes coming to France, because it's so much cheaper. It's like, oh, we can have like 300 hectares. Oh, dear. Yeah. I mean, it's a nice idea, isn't it? But the realities of that could be,
And there was another enjoyable question. What do you watch these shows for pure fantasy, practical ideas, or just a daydream? I mean, we've all shared our thoughts, but again, going back to a lady called Carol, to laugh at the innocence of the first-time buyer. We've all been in that first-time naive situation ourselves. And she thought it would be interesting to go back and re-interview them after they've been for perhaps a year or so. And I guess we all do that in our own day-to-day lives as tradie ladies. We, you know, when we're doing stuff with our customers, we kind of think back, oh, yeah, we did this and this is us, and we've moved on leaps and bounds from there. Other questions? What's the one thing reality TV shows gloss over that you wish they'd show more of? Again, paperwork, admin, the cost of labour, the cost of materials, and understanding what the budgets are. Some people have very limited budgets, so they tend to gloss over that on some shows. So it would be good to kind of know, are you dealing with 50k or you're dealing with 100k?
Yeah, that's quite a good one. They never share. I don't think I've watched any show where. To be honest, I think it's because like a lot of the YouTube channels that I watch, they're funding the renovations with the YouTube like money that they're getting. So they're concentrating on entertaining and like forming this good following. And then they're reinvesting the money into the renovation. So they haven't actually got a budget, I suppose. But the DIY TV shows, why is that not so talked about? I don't know. It would be interesting to know.
I mean, I only put one out there in a local group, and I put, have you ever watched Escape to the Chateau DIY or New Life in the Sun? Did those TV shows influence your decision to take on a French renovation project, or maybe convince you not to? And actually, the general gist of what I have a couple of potential guests for our show, but we'll go into that another time, that have bought chateaus and they didn't want to share publicly but they may give some information, so I need to follow up with that. But also, a lot of them said they watched them, but it didn't influence them. I'm not convinced personally. Because I think been influenced in a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's too late to say that now. It's like, you know, Chateau DIY and Escape to the Chateau's been out for quite a few years. I mean, how else would they know about chateaus being cheaper than France?
Yeah, somebody actually put, Monique actually put, yes, we binge watched them from California during COVID. Their property was inspirational. I think she's talking about Dick and Angel, although their projects were a bit cringy.
Oh, interesting.
We're ecstatic to be here. And yes, it's sometimes very challenging. It definitely takes a certain type of person to enjoy this process. It's not for everybody, but if you're a designer by nature with a strong project management skills, more than a bit of cash, a vision and a cast iron stomach, strong arms and don't mind learning in a manner that sometimes feels like drinking from a fire hose, it might be for you.
Brilliant. I love that one. That's like straight to the point. Touched on everything that we've said. I completely agree with that. Yeah,
I think that was the
good.
Best comment that we had, actually.
Okay, ladies, well, I think that's the end of today's podcast. I think we've talked about everything we wanted to and more.
Yeah, that was fun.
So thank you, everyone, for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to the show to make sure you don't miss the next episodes. Your hosts have been
Michaela Wilkins,
Rosie Ellis,
and Sue Peake Russell.
French Renault Diaries Uncensored was produced and mixed by Katie Wright, and the music is by Grand Project.